Hello. Welcome to the Therapy Thursday podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Yu, and every single Thursday, I learn lessons from my own therapy sessions and I share them with all of you. I'm so ready to go through and grow through so much with you. Let's go. I always try my absolute best to create a safe, inviting space to talk about all the things we never want to talk about, whether it's my own personal family trauma, my very bad string of breakups, my continuous IBS constipation struggle, or my period health. I'm diving into these conversations unapologetically. And that's why I'm so thankful to have a sponsor like DivaCup supporting our podcast. I ditched the disposable tampons and pads and finally switched to the Diva Cup in January of 2020, and I have never looked back. Ugh, truly the best period decision ever. My Diva Cup is a reusable menstruation cup made from 100% medical grade silicone. It's a durable, healthy, waste-free option for your period. Diva Cup is changing the way we talk about periods. They're so passionate about sustainability, equality, and fighting the stigma associated with menstruation. And I couldn't be more proud to have them as a sponsor on our first season. Can't wait to share with you more about my experiences with Diva Cup and their amazing line of products. So head to the episode description to find out more about Diva Cup and follow along on Instagram at the Diva Cup. I really hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, Kenzie.
Hi, Kelly.
I am so excited to have you on the Therapy Thursday podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm so excited to be here. When you told me that you were starting a podcast, I was like, oh, I'm so excited to chat with you and to hear all of your talks and all of your thoughts on things. And you're just like such a perfect person to create a space like this. So I'm so excited to chat with you today.
Oh, please. You are just the best. And I look up to you so much because you are always so open, transparent, brave, and courageous with all the things you talk about and just the energy that you bring to the table. But what I love is that we're actually friends in real life. And there's so many juicy things that I love talking about with you that people might not be able to get the real feeling of us. And that's why I'm so excited to kind of bring people into that space today. And how we start the show is doing a little, oh, please moment.
Oh, please.
Oh, please. So my oh, please is, okay, I've been feeling so burnt out. And I think that so many of us are feeling this way. And when I see posts about it, or when I just speak about it with my own therapist, I go, oh, please, let's try to make a change or do something about it. But I notice that once we kind of release that truth telling, when we say I'm burnt out, it's so hard to actually do anything about it. So my oh, please is both huffing at myself and honestly quietly begging myself to like take a break. You know, I don't know.
Yes, I feel like I'm in the exact same boat as you. And I honestly was thinking that that's my, oh, please moment, is really trying to tell myself to slow down and take a break, because I will always tell our community members that. I'll always tell my friends that. I'll always tell coworkers that. I will always tell other people that. But then when it comes to myself, it's almost like I make myself live in this vacuum where I set different standards for myself than other people. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm feeling burnt out or sad or tired or uncreative or whatever it is, I have to force myself to go through it in pain. And I'm like, oh, please. What is that standard that you're setting for yourself that you don't have for anybody else?
I feel that way so much. And I think it relates also to the other things that we struggle with in life. You are one of those people that so many of us look to for a safe space to talk about stuff, not even to make us feel better. But a lot of the times, I think we still put that pressure on ourselves, specifically when it comes to how open you've been talking about binge eating. Do you ever feel there's a lot of pressure to create that open, beautiful space to release a lot of venting when it comes to struggling with your relationship with food?
You know what I feel like? I feel more like there are certain ways to be palatable while talking about mental health and mental illness. And that's where I start struggling mm-hmm. and getting stuck in, because I feel like people are open to talk about mental health when you're like, oh, hey guys, I'm struggling today. I'm feeling down, and just know that it's okay to feel down. But when I like stop brushing my teeth or stop showering or stop taking care of my room, or when I can't stop binging and I haven't changed my shirt for 3 days, those are actual moments that people don't want to see, like don't want to see. And they're so embarrassing, and there's so much shame that's attached to them. So I feel a lot of pressure to curate the palatable, the attractive version of mental health and mental illness, you know, the types of things that are clickable, the things that are like, oh, if I'm going to talk about binge eating, then I'm going to be cute while talking about it. I'm going to like make myself dressed up. I'm going to put makeup on. I'm going to find the good light, you know? And so it can be tricky because it gets really curated then. And then I feel really inauthentic.
Ooh, I am shaking in this seat, because that is the thing I also feel like I talk about so much, one, to myself, two, with my therapist, and three, maybe only to two people in my life, because I also have that self-consciousness of the balance of, yes, we're so open on inauthentic, but we have to say it in a certain way. And so my question is, when you do open up about something like binge eating or any struggle that you're having, does it actually feel relieving when you do it? I think that's such an interesting question that I have for myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely feel like there is like relief. You know, I do feel like it's a bit of a release, because I did for so long like hide that about myself, especially with binging, because binging is the most stigmatized out of all of the eating disorders. Like when... Actually, that's a whole other podcast episode. But because binging is still so stigmatized, because it's still so new to talking about and being included within eating disorders, I definitely feel like there is a release when talking about it. But that's not the only thing that I really want to be talking about as well. So I'm actually mm-hmm. curious, what are your yeah. thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think for me, sometimes it's scary when all of us in our lives, we kind of write ourselves a story and a narrative, so that there is something that people come to us to, or an expertise we have, whether it's something you're really good at school or work or in your friend groups or even with your romantic partner, you kind of have a thing that people look to you for. And that's a scary thing when you start to heal from the things that often brought you connection in your life, or even an interest that you've had. And it's scary to build an identity that you feel like people quote unquote like you for or come to you for. And how will I learn how to build connection in my life when I'm not just someone who's always trying to help people talk through things? And what's funny is I want to be a therapist, so I don't really know yeah. what that means.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yes. Oh my God, for sure. I feel like it is sort of like your identity gets so wrapped in what you're talking about and what you're constantly posting about, that you do have to be careful, be really careful of that, because especially like when you start, maybe you felt like this, but when you get a diagnosis, for the first time, you might start identifying with it, and then getting like letting that mental illness mm-hmm. like leave and healing from it can be even harder, because your narrative around yourself is centered around it. And it's like, who are you if you're not a person that mm-hmm. struggles with an eating disorder? Or who are you if you're not a person who talks about binge eating all of the time? So I think like expanding ourselves and expanding the definition of ourselves and expanding our perception of ourselves on who we are is really, really, really important. Like making sure that we're constantly reminding ourselves that we're complex and multifaceted, and that we contain like, multitudes, I think is so, so, so crucial.
100%. And I love that we're talking about this, because we're talking from a stream of consciousness of what recovery in real time deserves to look like and feel like. And the hard part about social media is that you get stuck almost in frozen time, but people also want you healing and feeling better, but they don't want you to change so much that they can no longer connect with you. And that's so unbelievably wild to realize that's how a lot of unhealthy relationships in true life manifest too. When you're changing and growing, it gets harder to relate to certain types of people. Have you ever felt that in your personal life when it comes to when you're not online at all? Like you as a person, Kenzie, have you ever bonded with people over things when you're struggling and then you start growing a little bit? What does that feel like for you?
Oh my gosh, I was just talking about this a little while ago, and I love that you brought this up because it's so important for people to hear. Sometimes when you're in a shit place in life, you bond with other people who are also in a shit place in their life, and you might have like a trauma bond happening, or you might just like, you know, be in a phase where
I was gonna say trauma bond.
And you might be in a place where you're just attracted to other individuals who are meeting or who are able to meet you where you're at and who mirror to you exactly where you're at. And when you start growing out of that place, if those people are not also growing in that direction as you, that's okay, but it's most likely going to result in shifted friendships, shifted relationships, ending certain things. But then you are doing that to make capacity for new people and for new people in your life that can then grow with you in this phase and in this shift. And I'm sure that you have recognized this as well, but I'm so curious about your thoughts on this. But don't you ever look at like healing like not levels, but like layers, like you peel back one layer and then you go into the next one. And then sometimes people are stuck at different layers or who just are at different layers. And then you're like, yeah, we no longer suit each other right now. And then you meet other people when you're in like that phase of healing. And then like a year goes by and you're like, now I no longer connect with them too, like, you know, too much. And sometimes it's like made me wonder like, oh, what if I'm like shifting friends too quickly or like anything to do with that? And then I have to remind myself, no, you have a core group of people who are like growing with you and stuff. And then the other people are just people you've met on a journey that are just adding to the stories in your life. Have you ever felt like that too?
Oh, the thing that makes me so sad in my life is honestly, I've almost put myself on a lonely island because I only knew how to connect with and bond with and get very attached to people who were truly, like you said, markers of where I was at that time. And when I wasn't doing well is honestly when I was able to connect the most. But that's because I was coming from a place of lack, not a place of interest or love with people. Obviously, I did love them and I cared about them, but it was because I was so empty. So honestly, at this point in my life right now, I don't really have a lot of close connections because so many of those were based in trauma, stress, disordered behavior, or just a codependent need. And you know how deep codependency is and how unnoticeable that shit is.
Oh my God. It's so interesting because I always thought that codependency was like I have only ever heard of codependency really in like addiction and alcohol spaces, in sobriety spaces, when like people who are struggling with substance use issues or struggling with like overconsumption on something, like whether that be like porn or gambling or something to do with that. I've only ever heard of codependency in those types of dynamics where you have one person that enables them in order to help control the situation, in order to help the person who's struggling. And so they might give them money, they might give them access, they might give them places to stay, you know, and so on. And so when someone, you know, mentioned, they were like, oh, you have codependent issues in your relationships, I was like, what? No, I don't. What are you talking about? I was like so dramatic and like, that couldn't possibly be me. And then I realized that the codependent definition has expanded so much and that it grew into something that I didn't realize that I was a part of. You know, I was like so dependent on my partner's happiness and their safety and security that I was sourcing it completely from them. And then I wasn't able to regulate it for myself. And that, whew, wow. Once you like, that is like sort of like one of those things where it's like once you lift the veil, you cannot go back. You cannot go back.
Yes.
Yes.
Correct. And you know what the scariest revelation I've had in 2021 is? Do you want to hear this?
Mm-hmm.
The codependent relationship that I've realized that I've always had with Instagram and my audience. It's scary to me because there is a lot of, I mean, how is it not? And what I mean by that, if anyone doesn't really know what codependency is, there's lots of ways it manifests. And some of the biggest signals that I saw was you're doing things to make other people comfortable. You're creating to create a space for them. You're very worried about what they think and the way they view you, the way they judge you, the way they respond to you informs your sense of self. So how is Instagram not that for so many of us where we're posting to see how they're going to react? And by them reacting, it often causes us to feel very much like that's the true reflection of ourselves. And it's felt almost embarrassing that I didn't pick up on that for so many years. And I think it causes a burnout because now I'm actually aware that of that being a struggle. It's so easy to not get burnt out doing things in life when you're unconscious. You don't care.
Oh my God. So perfectly said. And it's, I'd love to like hear more about your thoughts on that because I'm really struggling with that right now. Like if I'm going to be honest with you and I haven't shared this with anybody yet. So Therapy Thursday gets the first dibs on it. This week has been really intense politically and it has been something that I've been really trying to wade through. And it really truly has felt like I'm in the dark, in a river, trying to get to the other side, and there's blinking lights, and I'm trying to grasp at them, and they're not within my reach, and I can't figure out where they are. And during this week, I've been learning and listening and trying to post up on things that I have felt to be true and that I've felt to be right. And it's been so intense politically, and people are so upset, and then people are so grateful, and then people are so angry with you, and people essentialize you right down to this one political view, like your whole entire being, everything, every year that you've lived has just now been boiled down to this one post that you've put up there. And I've just felt like it's so incredibly unfair. And so this is my issue. I have not even told any single soul this yet. So
well, we really appreciate you sharing this with us.
I'm really excited to talk to someone about this, including you. You can be my little therapist. I promise I'll pay you one day for your therapy time. but influencers get a little bit of a rush or a high when celebrities follow them. Like that's just like we put celebrities on pedestals. We get a
hell yeah. Hit.
Yeah.
A little? Yeah. Oh my God.
You know?
And like we would be lying if we weren't like oh my
God. Exactly. Exactly. So I've been very lucky and very rewarded in that department where a couple of really cool celebrities follow me and they popped up on my feed and I went to go, I haven't had too many like messages back and forth to them, but I responded to their stories and then I went into their stories. And the way that Instagram is set up now is that within the top of your stories, you can see if they follow you, like it says like you follow each other, or it says you have followed this account since 2018. And so I checked both of these things and these like two really big celebrities had unfollowed me. And it honestly gutted me. Like like my ego was completely gone and I felt so sad and embarrassed and like again, like I'm like walking in this like dark river, not knowing like what direction to go in, where I'm like, what, when did they unfollow me and why? Like, what did I do? What did I say? You know, I'm worried again that I'm too much. And it's just like, even though that these people don't complete me, and even though that these people aren't my close friends, they're nobody that I'm like, you know, looking, they're not in my close social circle or anything like that. And I feel like I have so much integrity over like what I do and things that I say and things that I repost. And still, I still felt so hurt. I still felt so hurt. And I don't know what the reason was, but I feel like that has been coming up more and more, being like, wow, I'm so dependent on these people for happiness and like my self-esteem to be regulated. And that's not okay. It's not good. Mm-hmm. And I'm like really trying to check myself on that, but holy shit, it's so hard.
Oh, Kenzie, thank you so much for sharing that. I feel that in my chest, in my gut. And so many of us can relate to that right now. I know that there are so many of us that do feel like when we post something, we want to see, did that person see it? Is that person still following me? Does that person like my stuff? Is that person who's no longer my friend checking up on me? I have a lot of those checking behaviors too when it comes to, does someone still think I'm worthy and important or something? And it's so human, regardless of where you are in your life, because we're all just people who have brains that are trained to be accepted. That's how you survive in your life. And to be serious about this, social media is so awesome, but oh my gosh, it's really just also changed a lot. And it's caused our brains to be completely rewired in the way that we receive good feelings. And so I don't want you to think it's bad, Kenzie. I want you to know that it's totally not bad. It feels bad.
Thank you.
You feel sad, but it's not a bad thing to fall into, because you would probably be inhuman if that didn't affect you. And it's so helpful for people to kind of see what it's like. For example, if I wasn't your friend, I would truly perceive you as someone who has no fear, no struggle, no nothing. Because that's how we view people. We put people on a pedestal.
Yeah.
It scares me to realize that if I didn't know you, I would perceive you in a completely different way. And it's so hard to still do that and remember that about other people.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. You're so right. And it's because, like, you know, you were the one that introduced me to Brené Brown. Did you know that?
No way.
Yeah.
Icon.
And one of the first video that you sent me of her, she was talking about the vault, which is an acronym for things I can't even remember now, but they're really important. Everybody should go Google what that is. But I remember in the specific interview, she was saying, in the absence of data, we will tell stories about people. That's what we do. And that quote has always stuck with me, that we will forever tell stories about things when we don't actually have the information about them. So if Kelly, if you aren't like living beside me like day to day and you don't know how my mood is or anything like that, and I'm just posting up what I'm posting online, you might be sitting there like, oh my God, I'm really struggling, but she's like posting all of these things and she's doing so well. And here I am, and I'm not, meanwhile, behind the screen, I'm like fucking losing my shit because I'm feeling like so sad about whatever situation. I don't feel so good about my content. I'm like binging like twice a day, whatever it is, right? And it's like, that's how social media is curated though. And you're right in the sense that social media is designed to hijack our most vulnerable social parts of our brain. You know, it's like it makes us so addicted to the app. The app is literally designed like slot machines, and the app is also designed to exploit our social needs for connection. And in a world where it's like, we're in a pandemic, we're so socially vulnerable right now, of course we're going to be like hitting refresh like it's a fucking slot machine. Sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear, but you can cut that out if you need.
Yes,
but
please.
It's like, it's just kind of, it makes sense, and it's still hard to regulate. Like, I feel like I cannot regulate myself yet on that app. And that's like that's my new thing that I have to figure out.
Kenzie, I am activated right now, okay? Because let me tell you, yesterday I just kind of, well, this whole year I've been talking about, you know, my sobriety from taking time away from smoking weed after doing it literally every day for 10 years. And then we talk so freely about, you know, not doing binge eating and working on a recovery from eating disorder, body image struggles. I realized 2 days ago how terrifyingly embarrassed I would be to say that I'm addicted to social media and it makes me feel sick. And that's the biggest addiction we have, because I'm so self-conscious about people thinking that I'm – here's the thing. If I announce that, people, I feel like, would be very, very triggered, because we all have it. So no one would want to hear that. No one wants to hear that, because we're already on the app. So you're going to call me out while I'm on this fucking app?
Yeah. I know, it's so meta. It's so weird and so meta, because it's like we say that we're like, regulate yourselves on the app. And then at the same time, it's like we're going to go on to the app in order to like promote this show or promote what we're doing and stuff like that. So it really is one of those things where it's like a both and, where it's like consciously using social media is so important. And like it mm-hmm. you do need it for business. People do need it to be social right now, and it's not the be all and end all. And I think that that's like more of a space that I need to explore.
I think you're doing a really great job of it. And so many of us are, when you're just noticing that you have an emotion, a feeling about something, and you let it sit with you and you're curious about it, that is the biggest, most impactful thing you can do for yourself. And Kenzie, as you're talking about this, I'm curious too, how it affects your personal relationships when it comes to boundaries with your phone. And also, here's what actually I really wanted to ask. Actually, how do you feel about making in real life connections when people are so easily able to know everything about you? And that's all of us. You can Google someone, you can know someone, especially those parts of you that don't often get seen, right? But in person, the first time, because our social media, all of us kind of have it as a nice little diary or a journal for little moments, even if you don't really write anything. How do you feel comfortable with still trying to have people meet you in real life the way that you want to be seen?
Yeah, definitely. That's such a great question. I really want people to acknowledge that there is an asymmetry of power where people are able to check in on me and know things about me much more readily than I am about them. And when I'm meeting people in real life, or I'm going to try to date someone in real life, it makes me really uncomfortable. And I know that this is kind of like one of the cons of what we do, that like, you know, we've consciously entered into this space. There's only so much that I can get mad at before this is a job that I chose to do. This is work that I chose to do, and this is the downside of it. But it makes me really, really uncomfortable. And that was actually a boundary that I had to set with my ex, where I had to explicitly ask, do not look at my stuff on Instagram. Do not listen to my stuff. Don't listen to my podcast. Don't do any of those things, because I need space and privacy right now from you. And it's not fair if you are able to check in on me and see what I'm doing every day and think and look at what I'm thinking about and look at what I'm talking about. And then I don't have access of the same amount of information to you. So it is incredibly vulnerable, because you're like bearing your heart, your soul, your mind to people, and people get access to that. But are they giving you the same? And it's like, normally they're not, you know? So for me, I do have a really big boundary with that, where if I am looking to date someone new, I'll usually find them on Instagram before they find me, and I'll block them. Because I'm like, I don't even want you to find me. I don't want you to look at my stuff. I don't want you to like, I don't want you to get to know me before you have met me. And to me, that feels really good, because it makes me feel like I can regain like some type of power. And it does make me feel more empowered in my relationships. But when it comes to just like, that's also why most of my friends now work in social media and are influencers, because they're like, they get it. Like they totally understand. And I love that. I love that they understand completely. But what about you? Do you ever have to set those boundaries in real life?
Oh, 100%. I feel so terrified of ever dating again because I've always dated. This is my first 2 years of my life not dating or talking to anyone. And that's also something I really hope no one I've ever dated or anyone I've dated before, you know, hears that, because once again, just like what you said, they are allowed to know everything about us because we take on that responsibility because we like doing it. I love telling everyone everything about me because that's just the type of people that we are. And we've curated that kind of style and interest when it comes to online. And I wouldn't change it at all. It's such a privilege for anyone to even give a shit and for people to relate to it. But I do remember, every single guy I've ever dated has brought it up maybe on the second date and gone, oh, so I saw your Instagram. And I go,
yeah.
Okay. And a lot of them have a different approach because they do understand that we're probably already going to feel a little bit insecure and uncomfortable, which is great. But unfortunately, it doesn't change. It's not their responsibility to make me feel good. It's also not my job to tell them what they can or can't do. Mm. But there's been two different styles. One guy was really kind. Well, I don't really, you know, I don't know. I was almost going to say something mean, but I'm not going to. He was kind in that moment and said, oh, I did find your Instagram, but I chose not to read any of it because I saw like long paragraphs and I was like, oh, she actually talks about stuff and I didn't meet you yet. Mm. And I was like, oh, that's so nice. But here's the thing, that shit still really affected the relationship because I really love what you said about that power dynamic of, they perceive us sometimes, not all, they actually perceive us as having more power than them, but we feel so powerless because they know everything about us and I know nothing about you.
Yes.
So there's already a misunderstanding as to how vulnerable we feel and how vulnerable they feel. And when you're first starting to date someone, within the first few dates, you're probably not going to have that deep therapy talk.
Yeah.
What you need, though, it's such an odd dynamic.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's also like we're not even in a space where we're just like these cookie cutter, you know, influencers who are just like beach models that are talking about literally nothing all the time except for affiliate links. Like we're actually talking about eating disorders, yes. Body image, self-hatred, you know, we're talking about pussies, we're talking about armpits, we're talking about like, honestly, we're talking about everything. Like we're like, hey everyone, who has a period? Let's talk about it. Hey, who wants to shave their armpits? Let's talk about it. We're like, oh, my hair is falling out. Do we want to talk about that? Kelly's like, oh, I'm constipated. Let's talk about that. Like we're not just talking about yes. like, hey, follow us around to the beach and like come like jump and skip with us and we're so hot and look at us. Like that's not our space. And we're also just like not a dog account. We're not like a cat account. We're not like a nature account. We're like talking about like hardcore human things. And so when people get access to those spaces, it's like we can also become like an inspiration well for people, where people get to just like take a sip of water and drink of water and a bucket of water from us whenever they want. And who's helping replenish us? It's like, you know, the people that they get to check in and like look and like drink whenever they want, but we're just like, we're trying to do it all ourselves. And so that's where I get pissed a little bit at those power dynamics when people have more access to me than I do with them, because I do feel like it's unfair. So I'm still figuring out how to navigate that because it's not my favorite.
You know what the scariest thing too is? I'm not even so self-conscious about them hearing about all the things that some people might perceive as yucky. I will talk about codependency and how I've dealt with breakups. Mm-hmm. That scares me so much because they know how my brain works when it comes to dating and romantic stuff. So it feels like they're going to think that they know everything about me. Kenzie, every single word we've spoken and filmed and posted and typed truly is still 0.05% of me as a person.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's like you're choosing to put that stuff up on social media. What are you not choosing? You know, like when we look at influencers, we shouldn't necessarily be looking at them like, oh, this is what they put up. It's like, wow, what are they choosing to not put up? What are they hiding? Not necessarily hiding, but what are they reserving? You know, what are they keeping in the dark? What sorts of things are they being quiet about that maybe they do want to talk about, but they don't know exactly what they want to talk about? What haven't they yet felt confident enough to talk about? You know, and like more and more will be revealed of them. But you're absolutely right. Like, we contain multitudes and we are so complex, and so like humans in general are just so deep. Like, you know, when we're talking about those layers, like we really are like all, you know, like our own version of Shrek, like where we're just like these like onions that we're just like peeling back like one layer at a time.
And I really want to know, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners want to know, okay, then, how do you date as an influencer?
Oh my God. Please let me know.
I don't think I've ever asked you that. I mean, I know everything. I don't think I've ever asked you how you meet people. And I don't know how I've never asked. I guess I just know about, you know, when you've been dating someone or if you're talking to someone. But how do you meet people? How do you do it?
I have no idea. Like, I meet people off of apps because I don't drink and I don't party the same way other people do. Like, my version of a party is like going to dinner with friends and like discussing the depths of the universe, and then like going home to go watch a David Attenborough doc, and then like eating smart food until I go to sleep.
Yep.
Like, that's like my version of like partying. So I don't really go to social spaces where it would be kosher to talk to strangers romantically, like, you know what I mean, like bars or clubs or lounges or anything like that. So I primarily use apps. Like, I use a bunch of different apps to date and to go on and to meet people. And I actually really love dating through apps. Like, of course, like everything, it gets tiring and you need to take a break and stuff, but I love apps. That's usually how I meet people.
Really? I love hearing that you love apps. I don't think I've ever heard someone say that in my 27 years of life.
Oh my God. I think
you
it's
love
like
apps.
Yeah.
Can I have some of that energy?
Yeah. I think it's like really fun. And
hell?
I think that like it's to me, it's really fun. And I try to give myself, I should start doing this with Instagram, but what I usually do, my strategy for dating, I mean, it's changed so much. So I don't know. For those of you who don't know, I went through like a really intense breakup last September, and it's May now. And so I haven't dated since then, because we've also been in like a 900 year lockdown here in Ontario. So there's like no way to date or even to like get my rocks off with somebody else. So I don't know what my new strategy will be, but usually I have like a very objective, and it's not necessarily romantic, but I do consider dating to be very similar to like you're trying to hire someone for a job. And so I try to look at it like that. So when I go on the apps, I'll be like very methodical about like, oh no, this person is like drinking in all of their photos. Drinking is obviously very important to them. Like, I try to like, I don't know, I try to just like live by my values, and I give myself a time limit to like go on the app 20 minutes every single day, and then that's it. I don't spend like hours on it or anything like that. And I think that it's like fun and scary and disappointing and exciting all at once. But I don't know how I would date if there weren't apps right now. Like, I would have to like go up to people in coffee shops and be like, "Hey, you're hot. Do you like David Attenborough docs too?" Like, I don't even know how I would date if there weren't apps. How would you date do you date through apps as well?
See, once again, this is when I really hope that no one from my past is listening. Kenzie, I kid you not, I have not spoken to anyone of the opposite sex in so long. But okay, I'm not going to lie. I have swiped a little bit. Okay, I'm not going to, but you know what I mean? There's nothing that's ever been me invested in anything. And I feel the same way. I don't drink. I haven't drank since college. That's because one, my body hates it. I have every digestive system issue on the planet. I'm also Asian and very allergic to it. I will turn into a red tomato and sweat it out for days. And also I just don't really enjoy that. And I'm not judgmental against it. And a lot of people that I love in my life are just really into that quote unquote normal socialization. So I also feel like I have a lot of trauma from dating apps because everyone I've dated from there has ended not really well. And I struggle to return back to things when I feel like I've been kind of stained by them, which is something that I'm really working on because it's not the app that's bad. It's just a little memory that I have. I'm the most sensitive little bitch on the face of the earth. does your shirt say horny, by the way? I'm just noticing Kenzie is wearing a shirt that says horny.
It does it. It says horny hence, for science.
I can only see the top word. And you know why? It's because I'm just seeing what I need to see. I'm just seeing what I need to see.
The universe is giving us signs.
That's what's happening right now. Yeah. I really wish I could meet people in real life, but I feel the same way where I want to practice that maybe this summer. If I just see someone who looks maybe like okay, I want to do this once during the summer to just go up to them and say, hey, just thought you looked interesting. Like I really want to build that skill because for me, if I know that I'm not really into the apps, I want to try that. But I think the hardest part is realizing that I do feel embarrassed by how hard dating is for me because you as a human and a lot of us feel, you know, we don't totally hate ourselves. A lot of us feel like we might be viable, but the fear of things not working and stuff like that is almost such a big monster that I wish I didn't give it that much power. But I think over time, if you embrace how scary things can be, just like how you embrace the different waves of emotions and roller coaster ride that dating app gives you, I love when you said that because it is filled with all these different aspects, but it's so cool that you've learned to embrace it. So that's why you like it.
Yeah, for sure. And I just wanted to actually touch on something that you said about being embarrassed with how hard dating is for you. And I definitely share the same sentiment and I share the same feelings. The difficulty that comes with dating comes from me caring a lot. I care a lot about choosing a significant other and I care a lot about spending time with someone who I'm romantically and physically intimate with. And it is really hard for me to do that because I have a very narrow scope of who I let into that space and who I want to fill my time with. And so I care a lot and I'm very sensitive and I'm very, very romantic. And it makes me really, really scared to share those parts of myself with because they are so vulnerable and so tender. And so I get really embarrassed when I'm like 31, only failed relationships, like, you know, nothing exactly on the horizon. When I say nothing exactly on the horizon, I mean like nothing's on the horizon. Like there's no person within my vicinity that I would want to be with or that I would want to spend the rest of my life with or anything like that. And it's hard as well as somebody who considers themselves to be, you know, a hardcore feminist to also be embarrassed about the fact that I care so much about my romantic life when there's so many things in the world to shift, to change, to activate, to be a part of, to create a different world, you know, and here I am and I'm like getting sad that I haven't found this person yet, but I have to tell myself that I'm like, I care a lot. Like this is a part of my life that I actually really do care about. And I have to figure out a way to be okay with that because I've fought it for so long. I fought it like politically, you know, like I'm a woman, I'm independent. I don't need a man. I don't need a relationship to define me. I'm going to explore different ways to be sexual with myself and to like look at people's sexual, like all of those things. Like I've like done all of that. And then I still come back to like, well, my heart still really, really, it it longs to, like, you know, be with someone. And I'm trying to find space to, like, accept that and be okay with that and know that that's not even a desperate part of me or an immature part of me, that that's just a part of me that cares about something. And I'm going to try to figure it out along the way. But I share the feelings of embarrassment. Like, it can, that can definitely, there's shame there to definitely explore.
Oh, I felt that too, especially of trying to become independent and strong and not desperate. That was so much of the pressure I put on myself after leaving a super long-term codependent unhealthy relationship. I felt like I had to prove to myself and the world that. And Kenzie, it's so wild to me that we both have this tendency to judge being a person. A human need is for love, connection, intimacy. That's what makes you a breathing human being. And our brains are now like, oh, what? There's so many other things to focus on. And when you get to those basic roots of when you realize your tenderness and your heart needs something, isn't it amazing that we forget that's such a big piece of you being true to yourself, and that's you truly connecting with yourself?
Yes. Preach. Yes, absolutely. You're so right. Yes, 100%.
And I just want anyone who's listening right now to leave listening to this knowing that all parts of you are so, honestly, I hate this word, but normal. Do you see how many things that Kenzie and I talked about and touched on when it came to all the different feelings, excitements, insecurities, confusions we have? And that just goes to show you how nice it is to just hear that other people really get you. And thank you so much, Kenzie, for coming on the Therapy Thursday podcast. I feel like every time we talk, it feels like the sweetest friend therapy ever.
I completely feel the exact same. Thank you so much for sharing space with me today. And thank you so much for, like, having me on. And I'm so honored to be able to talk with you about some of these subjects that are so dear to my heart. So I love you. And thank you so much for having me.
I love you. And can you please share with our listeners all the amazing things you're doing and where you want them to find you so you can get so much more of Kenzie's sweet angel heart?
Yeah, absolutely. Come and hang out with me on Instagram. That's where I'm primarily active, and that's at Kenzie Brenna. And then also come and hang out with me on my own podcast. It's Conversations with Kenzie. I've got Kelly on for an episode. You definitely have to check that out for sure. So thank you so much, Kelly.
I love you, and I'll talk to you so soon. Bye. Hi, everyone. I know for me, sustainability can be so overwhelming, and I don't talk about this as often because I'm working on it in my everyday life. But sometimes I just don't know where to start. Like, yes, hello, of course I want to do my part for Mother Nature.
Oh, Kelly, it's so true. I have found my own journey to be more eco-conscious. It's exactly what you just said. It's through my everyday actions, and that has been the easiest step for me. So recently, I actually bought a water filter for my fridge to replace all those gross plastic bottles. And this one might kind of sound random, but I removed all the paper napkins from my kitchen. So it's just the little things for me right now.
Oh my gosh, Danny, that's exactly it for me. My friend Nathan came to visit me for a couple days, and he was blown away by the fact that I had no napkins, no paper towels, or even tissues. And that's okay. Here's the thing. It's because my mom taught me to use paper towel to blow my nose as a kid, and that just really stuck with me. And since switching from tampons and pads to my reusable Diva Cup in January 2020, I've been practicing sustainability down there. Danny, isn't that wild?
Yeah, it is wild. And because it's made from 100% medical grade silicone, it's a healthy and durable option every month. And beyond being reusable, they have launched a pretty incredible recycling program with TerraCycle. So through Diva Recycles, Diva Cup users are actually able to fully recycle their Diva Cups and Diva Wipes packaging. So having a reusable, sustainable option for your period every month can make you feel so much better about your sustainability goals.
Ooh, we love to hear it, and we love to see that action. If you are looking to make a sustainable shift for your period, head to the episode description to read more about Diva Recycles and why using a Diva Cup may be the perfect solution for your menstrual cycle. Be sure to follow along with @TheDivaCup on Instagram to hear more sustainability and menstrual equity news.
Being a fly on the wall for that conversation with you and Kenzie. First of all, thank you for letting me in on that space. I know that oftentimes for influencers to share a real behind the scenes or a peek behind the curtain of what life is like online can be pretty intimidating, because there's a piece of us that wants to believe that everything we see on social media is real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you and I both know that that's not necessarily always the case.
Yeah. What was your reaction? Like, just as you were listening to it, what kind of things were like, oh, is she going to say that? Because I feel great actually being able to talk about those things. And it was nice to just let people in on just more of me, because those are so many thoughts and feelings that I have all the time. It's weird to kind of hide them.
Right. And I think that was the interesting piece, was there wasn't a single thing that you said that kind of made me feel like, oh, why is she saying that? I was more just like, I wish that you shared this more.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very refreshing to hear some honest conversation between you and Kenzie that felt a little bit less cushioned or safe. Because I find knowing both of your platforms and knowing yours more specifically, I guess, I know that you often feel responsible to curate a safe environment for your followers, because they really seek that out from you. And you called it a privilege. And I think that's a really interesting way of looking at it.
Mm.
Do you feel that it's always a privilege?
I think I do, because I think what's interesting is I always feel like it's easier to be hated online as a person. And I truly feel like I don't have any of that. So I think that's where the word privilege comes in. And maybe because a part of me always wanted a safe person when I was younger, someone to look up to, I've projected that onto myself.
Right.
Like I've just.
You really take that role.
Yeah. And, I truly feel so weird about the fact that I cannot control that impulse of thinking that I have to do that for people, because seriously, I know none of you listening ever think that I need to be that for you. So.
But do you really think that? Because, you know, I think if anything has taught me in our dynamic is that oftentimes we have had circumstances. I'm going to take the curtain back a little bit. We have had circumstances where you have posted something or shared something, whether it's been an ad, whether it's been a vulnerable moment, and you will have people come for you in your DMs because you aren't projecting what they want, or you're not sharing the information that they want, or they just simply don't agree with you. And I find it very interesting that sometimes we try and push that away. We forget about that.
I did.
The other side of it is super rewarding, right? You are saying that there is a big piece of this that is very, very rewarding for you. And you love to share that journey with people. And I genuinely believe that you do, Kelly. Like I'm not saying this to try and undermine the feelings that you have, but I am trying to in some ways remind you about the instances that we've had even in the last 6 months where we have felt the weight and the responsibility of an audience that feels sometimes like we owe it to them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you think that the codependent piece, because that's what I think it is, I think that there's a codependency in that relationship with social media. Do you think that sometimes erases what you feel when people have an expectation of you that you wouldn't put that expectation on yourself necessarily?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm nodding my head a bunch. You all can't see, but I am. yes, and that's actually something that is so sad to realize, is that a lot of codependent relationships can erase the truth and the real things you feel about that relationship, because you kind of just show up. Right? Whether it's like a toxic partner or a toxic family member, you kind of just stay there for the good moments and you see the reason why they work and you work and you work together and you kind of feed off of each other. And then you realize you're not noticing all the bad moments or the moments that make you feel insecure, shitty, unhappy, even resentful. And I do bury a lot of that, mostly because my fear is that if I let those feelings in, I'm just gonna want to throw my phone in the ocean. And that's the weird thing about what I do. And I think just it confuses so many people. It's like, well, then why do you keep doing it if it sucks? It's like, because it's codependent, and it's also you do have a passion for it. But I have received a lot of messages over the years. Okay, not a lot, but when they do, they really affect me. For example, if I do an ad for something and one person thinks that I'm promoting something negative, I just go, really? Like, really? Right. Do I just have to be, I don't know what you want me to
perfect.
Be.
You have to be perfect.
It's so bizarre, though. Like, I truly can't handle all the projective nature of social media, and we all do it though.
That's the big piece that I think we have been working on, particularly as we've been producing this show, mm-hmm. is how much do we let what others believe of us and who we are and what our values are yeah. project into this project. And I think this has been a really safe space for both of us to explore topics and explore our feelings about things without the necessary pressure that comes with social media of making sure that we fill all the voids and that you mm-hmm. cover all the niches, and that in particular, you in particular, Kelly, create a safe space for people. And I think you've allowed yourself to not have to do that with the podcast as much. I think it's very interesting 100%. When I reflect on the conversation you had with Kenzie. And something that you both touched on is, you know, the political heaviness that you feel and the obligation to have a voice. Where does that fit right now in a time when – I know we've talked on this before, but I kind of want to dive into it because Kenzie shared very vulnerably about how much this has been affecting her mm-hmm. because she feels like she's drowning in a river is kind of the analogy mm-hmm. that she gave. Do you feel similarly?
Yeah, but honestly, I've done so much work with my therapist to let go of that burden. So it really hurts my heart to see Kenzie holding that burden because it is on her. Like, this is genuinely a burden influencers have. And she actually told me that she doesn't talk to her therapist about this, like social media. And that's actually so interesting because neither did I until earlier this year, because I almost felt embarrassed by the fact that I felt really down about something that I'm supposed to love. And my fear was that my therapist would tell me to stop doing it. So I was hiding it.
Oh, yeah, you didn't want to hear.
That's a codependent toxic relationship that you're hiding something. It's so interesting. It's like, you know, I never wanted to tell my therapist about the bad things my boyfriend was doing to me. So it's like the same thing. And this is your daily life. This is your biggest stressor that you're putting in a box. I remember going to therapy and sometimes I would just be absolutely dying over like Instagram engagement or brands putting pressure on me or just me not wanting to post and things like that. But I would go into that therapy session thinking, what should I talk about with my fam? Like, what family problems am I having? What body? Yeah. It's weird to not talk about it.
I appreciate like the honesty you're giving yourself right now and me, because I think that oftentimes, even when influencers touch on how hard being an influencer is, they keep it very surface level because obviously you don't want to disenfranchise your audience. Like, for example, if we were watching a TV show and the actress came out and was like, I hate being on that TV
yeah.
show, you don't feel like you want to watch that TV show anymore. You're like, oh, this actress hates being on this show. It ruins it for you. So I think there's a piece of that with social media that you feel an obligation to, even when it's hard, like you want to come back to it and you love it because you don't want your audience and your followers to feel as though it's a burden for you or that they're burdensome.
Dude, you hit it on the nail. That's exactly
but
what
the
it
reality,
is.
It's not that they're burdensome for you. It's that the game itself, the social media game, which it is, Instagram is a game. In a lot of ways, there's a lot of mm-hmm. rules to follow. There's a lot of things that the game likes. There's a lot of things that the game doesn't like. Sometimes mm-hmm. the game changes its mind. Mm-hmm. You know, that piece of it, I think, is what is burdensome. It's not necessarily just the people, though I think for some influencers, that's probably the case because it creates almost a distance. And I'm curious to know, in your own social relationships, has being an influencer really affected the way that you make digital connections and both real life connections as well?
Honestly, I think they've really affected my already existing in real life connections, which has been very hard for me to wrap my head around and accept. I've had close friends of mine. One time, there was an instance where I was, she probably is listening to this and it's fine because it's something that I want to share that's very helpful for any like me to say, I guess. So I had posted a lot about how my upstairs neighbors were those really loud sex neighbors that were having sex all the time, fighting all the time. And I find I was so fed up with it in my personal life. I decided to post about it on Instagram because it's kind of like, it felt like almost something I was hiding because it bothered me every fucking day. And she legitimately asked me, is that fake? Like she truly asked me if I was like making it up. And I said, what do you mean? She's like for content. This person has known me for like 10 years at least. And that really hit me in the face. One, because it's scary to think that people don't trust you. Right. Two, it is true that a lot of things that you create are not real, but
that's what I was going to ask.
That's what I mean.
Is it because, you know, in the past, you've even admitted on this podcast that mm-hmm. it's a generation, it's literally generating content, mm-hmm. right? So it's not necessarily that things aren't happening to you. It's just how do you repurpose them mm-hmm. into something palatable or digestible for people to consume?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's disgusting the process behind the scenes. You really feel actually. Not you, I often will feel almost grossed out by how much work and time and focus and fear that I have while I'm trying to just post something because you said it perfectly. You curate to make it as easily viewable, digestible, and interesting as possible. And it's not even a choice. It genuinely is a demand. Like, yeah. I know it's a choice I am making and I could choose not to. I could just choose to post really gross, stupid stuff that is not pretty, not bright, not sunsets, not flowers, not me smiling, not me having lip gloss on. But unfortunately, that's when you would lose the game and it's really messed up. It's true.
I think I want to dive into that a bit more because I don't think that it's just you and influencers. Like, mm-hmm. if we take it back to the beginning of advertising. Mm-hmm. Advertising and marketing has always been about packaging mm-hmm. something, a product, an idea, a value, and repackaging it into something that is digestible and palatable for people, right? So mm-hmm. this isn't like a new concept. No. Like influencer marketing gets a bad rep because what we've done is we've just humanized it. Instead of taking it as a picture or a product or a TV show, we've just used a human to do mm-hmm. that work for us, right?
Yeah.
So you say all these negative things about yourself, but this is actually just the process of advertising in a lot of ways. Right. So it's not like you and a bunch of influencers like reinvented the wheel. You just yeah. took what existed and you humanized it. The challenging piece is with all of that comes like the human psychology of like you are a living, breathing thing that has real feelings, real emotions, real values. You live in the real world. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of have these two pieces of yourself to balance in some ways, right?
Oh, yeah. And you often decide and make a conscious choice to live in the world that's not real versus a real, more fulfilling life. And that's what the addiction and codependency with social media and maintaining your relevance in life is. In relevance in the social media realm, that's what your life becomes is instead of going to socialize, you think, man, I need to sit at home for 4 hours curating these stories to submit tomorrow. It's really like right. that. It's scary. And the world of influencing is not glamorous. And I think everyone knows that, though. I don't think that's hidden knowledge. I think everyone.
I don't know that everybody knows
that.
It's. I think yeah. that because we are so entrenched in a lot of industries, both of us. I'm not even an influencer, but being in a business community, you get to see that side of it where you're like, oh, this is a ton of work and it can be really toxic sometimes. I think that the mass general population doesn't believe that. Like I've had conversations with people where they're just like, they think it is the super glamorous life and mm-hmm. yet they can't see that person can't be without their phone for hours and hours and hours, not because they're addicted, though that may be part of it. It's they have to be reachable at any moment, or they need mm-hmm. to be able to create and curate new content at any moment. So if something happens,
that is like so Instagram worthy or that is so postable, and they don't have the means to capture it. Well, what a shame. Because, you know, you right. feed off of that.
Mm-hmm. My sister said it really perfectly to me one time. She said, you look at the world differently, like influencers, like you do. And I said, yeah, everything's a photo to me. When I'm looking at anything, I really think, how can I take a picture of this? How can I take a video? How can it's no longer living to live. It's living to capture and put back out.
Interesting.
It's almost like you are a machine. It's like I absorb real life, and whatever I go through in my life, which thank God I don't do this anymore, but 2 years ago, if I was going through like a heartbreak or things like that, I would live it and immediately try to write about it and then spit it out immediately into a post. And the hard part about that is that's what makes you often successful in this category of social media that comes to that's like mental health, body image, all these things that are more vulnerable. That's what makes you quote unquote successful, because people feel so connected to you. And as I've done less of that, your engagement changes because you're just not like a raw open wound for people to be so fascinated by. And I think that's why I view social media a little bit differently now, because that grosses me out. It really grosses me out to realize that if I'm not fully exposed, it just doesn't catch people as much.
What I think you're explaining is trauma porn.
Oh my God. That is what this sector of the social media world is, whatever this pocket is.
That's kind of what I was going to ask you about, because
trauma we've talked about,
yeah, we've, this is something, you know, I studied political science, and there's all these different sectors of kind of what we consider porn, right? Mm-hmm. So there's like, it's just what people, they just in a way get off from it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that the social media has in some ways really commodified trauma porn. Mm-hmm. And you have that experience. And the question that I was going to ask just before we kind of dive into that, but you came from two different sectors. So you started in fitness, mm-hmm. in the fitness community on mm-hmm. Instagram, and that's how you built your platform. Mm-hmm. You transitioned into what would be more of the mental well-being and mental wellness space and more of the vulnerable space of social media. Mm-hmm. Both obviously have their toxic characteristics, right? We've touched a lot on how the fitness community on Instagram is really toxic. Can you share how this sector has become really toxic for you?
Yeah, I think that this one is all about sensationalism. Is that the right word? Like being just sensational and wow, bam, like it has to be so, oh my gosh, in your face, so intense, so clickbaity to get people's attention in this space. And for example, in the past when social media was, when I was just doing like fitness and stuff, people just would watch your journeys. And it wasn't so much about having to invite everyone into your intimate thoughts and healing processes on everything and having to admit to all your stuff. Once again, I know no one's telling you to do this, but it is what works. So what I'm saying is when you feel like you have to do it is because there's honestly like a formula for success on social media in a way. We all kind of know it.
100%.
Right.
100%.
And social media has changed so much where I'm not personally invested in anyone because there's a million things coming at me at one time. So it's toxic feeling for me because I don't feel able to care like I used to. It's not a choice to be have no senses and not be able to connect with people. I almost feel like I genuinely can't. There's just too much.
So when you say not caring, does that mean about what you're consuming, like what you see, or more so about what you're putting out? Okay, interesting. Mm-hmm.
And then what I put out, I really try to – it's very scary to realize too that you really sometimes do have to be like, oh my gosh, look at this, to get someone to just engage with your content. I mean
– do you think that's partially because in the sense of like the trauma porn – if people are becoming desensitized to all of these issues because they're consuming so much of it, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same idea that when we become desensitized to poverty or when we become mm-hmm. desensitized to sex, because everything that we're consuming is, you know, if we see too much poverty or if we see too much sexuality, it doesn't really register in our brains anymore. I often wonder if sometimes in this particular niche on social media, people do become desensitized to some very serious issues because they're just seeing it all the time from all these people that they're following. So you sharing about, for example, something like day-to-day burnout, that's super real and exhausting, doesn't really capture the attention because it's not traumatic enough.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I hate that. I wish it wasn't this way. And that's often why I just give up caring in terms of like, I feel so powerless. Like I can't change that. I'm a victim to it, you know, and then I choose to participate in it. So then you feel so annoying for even being affected by it because you're adding to the pile of shit that you're saying is shitty for you.
I think I want to wrap this up because I think there's so much more in here that we could dive into about your relationship with social media. But now that you've in some ways identified a bit of a codependency, how do you manage that? As somebody who is a self-proclaimed codependent and has been working through that pretty extensively in your life with therapy and honesty with yourself, the lens that you now view your relationship with social media, what's next for that?
Like, what am I going to do with it? How am I going to manage
it? Not even what you're going to do with it. Just like, you know, finishing these conversations. What does that look like?
Yeah, I think when you own up to the fact that you have a codependency with social media is when you'll be able to genuinely work on the relationship you have with it. Because just complaining about it or feeling affected by it and not saying anything to yourself, you are doing yourself a disservice. And it's was helpful for me to admit that I give in to it constantly and I have no control over it and I hold all these feelings on it. And the way that I'm trying to be better about it with myself is knowing that showing up more and posting more is not going to change this feeling. So wow. I don't try to go out more and get more engagement and stuff, even if brands and my managers or whoever is trying to think about ways to boost me. I'm like, this is weird. And I let myself sit in the fact that that's so weird that I have to constantly show up just so that people don't forget me. And then I realize, you know what? All this in the future is going to change and implode in some kind of way just because life goes in cycles. And I just don't want to fully lose myself to this when it goes away too.
Whether it goes away or whether you decide to leave.
Right.
You know, you have that, you know, in the back of your mind that you want to preserve the integrity of yourself and give yourself a little bit of space, like kind of like a, you know, a secret part of you that's protected.
Yeah, I don't want to lose my mind over this. And I genuinely think that most of our generation has genuinely lost our minds and sense of self to this machine that has brought so much good to our lives and now is just kind of turned on us and we don't really know what to do. So I think honestly, just talking about it a lot in therapy and not lying to myself about how, oh, I'm just being sensitive. Oh, who cares? Well, I'm going to have to make a decision eventually to move on to another phase of my life too. So I just am trying to stay honest because it's easy to lie to myself about how it doesn't affect me.
And knowing that in some ways it's powerful to know that you can work on the healthier relationship with it, right?
It is.
I think that's really impressive and I'm really proud of you for recognizing that you don't have to maintain this relationship dynamic with it just because you have been successful, In any career, it's very difficult to leave when you feel like you're at your peak, you know? Not saying you're leaving, but you know, for any person, you don't think about CEOs or managers that are like, cool, I'm doing really good at this job. I'm going to just say, see you later. Like, no, like it's very hard to take a real hard look at success and what it's doing to you. Because in some ways you are really, really, really successful. And part of the success has been difficult for you because the actions that take you there are not always easy and they have effects, real effects on your life.
And when you when you say I'm successful, I feel so like, ugh. I genuinely feel the imposter syndrome. Because once again, this is why with social media, it's a never ending climb. So you don't ever right. feel proud of yourself. You never feel, and I think everyone who has an Instagram feels that way. You're always just trying to climb more and more. And just being honest about it with myself, it's kind of scary to say all this, but I think more people need to talk like this because it's how everyone feels. So why are we hiding it?
Right. And the big thing for you, I think, and why I'm so excited to keep doing episodes like this is because I hope that the people that follow you and that engage with you recognize that though it is a privilege to share your life online, it isn't always your responsibility to create trauma porn and to create a safe space and to be the cushion. You're a human. You have more to offer.
I'm gonna cry. Those are like really nice affirmations. Whoa. Well, I need to go cry now. Love you all so much. Thank you for listening. We will see you next Therapy Thursday. Hear you, talk to you then. Bye-bye.